Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
We're going to start by talking about the big story, which essentially broke too late for the newspapers last night, which is a bit odd given the people who are involved have a full understanding of exactly how the news cycle works, unless that's what they wanted. So, before I get into this, Owen, is this the biggest turnoff in Irish sport? The wranglings of boards and administrators? Do people... Is everybody reaching for their... I promise that we're going to sex this up as much as we possibly can to make it interesting and entertaining and vital. And it is absolutely vital in terms of the future of football. There is a battle going on for the hearts and minds of Irish football this week. And last night there was an extraordinary interjection into that debate. I'll get to that in a minute. But do people find this like the single most boring story, or am I just a little bit jaded by the whole thing?
You're asking me for a sexiness rating on the whole.
Yeah,
FII,
give me the Owen Sheehan sex appeal for this story.
It's a 3. Like, ordinarily, if it involved all Niall Quinns, or it was a selection of former footballers, so it was Niall Quinn at one side and Roy Keane versus the other, or Mick McCarthy somehow.
McAteer writing, put it in your book, put it in your book.
Then then you would have something. The point here, and the really disappointing thing from a sexiness point of view, is that people just don't really care about your Gary Owens and your Jerry McEnany's. I hate to put it bluntly, your job is extremely important. You have the future of Irish football in your hands, and everybody cares deeply about the future of Irish football. But a late night statement would have just been so much more juicier if these were people who had a higher sexiness rating. You're right. There's also, of course, an element of people being jaded by this, but it's kind of like home stretch territory with a big council meeting this week, a big year, a big month, I should say, with the EGM coming later this month as well. So, no, at the same time, I still think a statement being released at whatever time it was, 11:30 last night, or at least that's when it was published on various news sites, that is. There's an appeal to that for sure.
So there was a press conference yesterday where the interim CEO and the interim deputy CEO of the FAI came out to lay out their case, where they're going to try and convince council that the course of action that they're on at the moment is literally the only course of action in town. It's the only way to save the FAI, given the absolute massive debts that the organisation are in. Essentially, if you can remember, the government announced that they would wade in with a bailout. And let's be under no illusions, it is a bailout. It is a short-term loan, but like, look, sometimes these things get kicked down the... These cans get kicked down the road, and eventually the money disappears over a period of time. And it's another government in the future's worry about whether or not they gift 30 million or whatever it is to the FAI. But without it, the FAI has gone bust. There's no way around that. Like, that was certainly the way that it was painted at the time. And everybody who was involved in those conversations said, we need this deal, otherwise we're going bust. They did the deal. They signed a memorandum of understanding. It came with terms and conditions. Some of the terms and conditions were that the term limit for people involved at the senior levels, particularly at board level of the FAI, had to be capped at 10 years. So you couldn't sit on the board forever and ever and ever and ever and like be mates and, you know, not really hold things up to account. There had to be fresh blood in, and that the constituency of that board needed to be half and half, half people from the football family and half outside independent directors. Seems fairly reasonable for the investment that the government is making. The FAI at the time signed up to it. And yesterday there was a press conference where, again, the details of this were re-established as part of a very wide-ranging press conference that took in the COVID-19 situation in Waterford, the streaming situation with regards to the League of Ireland, what might happen next year's League of Ireland, what's going to happen with Stephen Kenny, what's going to happen with the two lads who were doing the press conference. And essentially, there was a couple of lines in it about Mark McSharry, who is a Fianna Fáil TD, who has said quite a bit of stuff, some of which the FAI have, again, fairly extraordinarily, taken the opportunity to issue statements on in the past and said that he was incorrect about stuff. So again, yesterday in the press conference, Gary Owens, the interim CEO, said that some of the stuff that Mark McSharry had said recently had been incorrect. Last night, this statement arrived at around about 11:30, maybe just after 11 o'clock, and not through the FAI channels, by the way. So it was essentially sent out privately, not through the FAI's media operations, which means that it is a statement direct from certain members of the board of the FAI, the elected directors of the FAI. 5th of August, it stated. The elected directors of the FAI are alarmed at a statement made during a press conference on the 5th of August 2020 by the association's interim CEO, Gary Owens. During the press conference, Mr. Owens refuted a claim made by Fianna Fáil deputy Mark McSharry that a MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with government was signed on the 30th of January without it being discussed at a board meeting earlier that day. So McSharry says the board didn't talk about it at the board meeting. Mr. Owens says McSharry is wrong about that. Here's the statement continues. Mr. Owens went on to claim that, in inverted commas, the board members had the opportunity to review what the terms and conditions were and they did sign off on it. They didn't sign off on it afterwards. They signed off on it beforehand. And then in brackets, Mark McSharry is wrong on that. And that's the end of the inverted commas. The elected directors wish to state on the record they did not approve the memorandum of understanding before it was signed. Therefore, Mr. McSharry's statement is correct. The facts are, they only received a draft copy of the MOU at 9.02 a.m. on the 30th of January and immediately raised concerns regarding some of the conditions with the chairman and received no reply. The elected directors listed below are calling on the interim CEO to immediately clarify his comments, his remarks. Signed, Paul Cook, John Finnegan, Martin Herity, David Moran, Jerry McEnany, Joe O'Brien, Richard Shakespeare and Ursula Scully. So, calling on the interim CEO to clarify his remarks. It's the board are saying the CEO has now got something wrong in public. That's about as serious a rift as I can remember in any sports organization going back a long period of time. I can't remember. I can't actually remember the board issuing a statement saying that something that their CEO had said is wrong and they need him to clarify that immediately. I don't remember this. Oh, and it's like, Now this is the board who we know would, some of them would be gone if the memorandum of understanding is actually implemented, because I'm going to count them for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So that's the 8 elected directors of the FAI. So the independent directors haven't signed this. And we know that 8 into 6 doesn't go. At least 2 of them are going to be gone if the memorandum of understanding, where it has to be a 6 and 6 makeup, changes. So that was pretty interesting stuff. Let's hear from Niall Quinn, because he was asked why he thinks there's still a case of hysteria around the FAI.
It's about returning the trust, Will, to the game that's obviously missing now, and how do we best do that given the financial predicament we find ourselves in. And the misleading stuff that's out there, you know, you're right, COVID-19 has meant we haven't had a series of meetings, we haven't been able to go face to face with people, we've just got on with it while the narrative went the way it did and hysteria crept in. Both politically and you know, in media in general, we try to remain diligent, get the best position on the table for discussion, and the Red Cow on Friday will be a big day. But I think that the misgivings that were out there, you know, as Carrie's mentioned, it is another one. You know, that people are going to get turfed out after all the work that they've done. That's not true either. So I think when people understand and weigh up exactly what we're proposing, why it's being proposed, then I would hope that a unity will come around and we will see 6 plus 6, not 6 v 6.
Lloyd, you mentioned that there was 12 people appointed externally, and you talk about the hysteria. I think people generally are really angry about how we got to where we were with Irish football, and for that reason I think they're also wary of the fact that the same mistakes might be made again. And you know, from that viewpoint, you know, the 4 roles that were appointed internally were key roles. We're talking League of Ireland Director, Chief Operating Officer, Commercial Marketing Director, Head of Grassroots. But one of those roles is taken by Rhea Walsh, who we found out recently that had done work personally for John Delaney. So the optics of that aren't great. And I would just wonder why those roles couldn't have been, with the appointment of those people, couldn't have been a little bit more transparent. I think that's what people are wondering.
Okay, well, I mean, I'll tell you what we did. I mean, we came in, we arrived in February, and effectively we got involved with the staff pretty much straight away. We got everybody engaged in what we would call a bottom-up process, which was, we asked them the question, what would your unit look like if it was perfect? We were trying to develop a new strategy for the association. We brought in two external groups to actually help us with that. Yvonne Clancy, who was an external strategic consultant, and then we brought in Utrecht Perstein, who were doing the CEO process as well, to review some of the capabilities and the competencies that we had. And broadly speaking, three or four people came up through the system and that were exceptional in terms of the assessment that we would have had, and there was an independent assessment there. We wanted to give a message in that part of the association that if the talent was in here, we were going to promote from within, because there was a pretty poor culture here and a serious lack of confidence in the team that was in place. And we felt it was important, if the talent was there, which was independently assessed, that we would actually promote them. At the same time, when we sat down with Stephen Kenny and we asked him the same question, we've actually recruited and brought in people on the football side. So we've actually brought in 12 external people on the football side. If you look at the senior leadership team now, there's 10 on that team, including the 8 appointments that we would have made. There's myself and Niall that are there at the moment on an interim basis. There's Stephen Kenny, who actually is sitting in when it suits him, to be honest with you, in terms of the role that he would have. And we've 2 people promoted from internally. So on the senior leadership team, there's 50% of that team is new. On the international team, we've taken in actually 12 people. So we've actually assessed the skills that we required on both sides. And there was a balance between promoting the people internally that have the skill sets to do it and actually looking for external support where we felt we needed it.
It's been a very, very interesting 24 hours. It's been a very interesting few months, really, in the history of the Football Association of Ireland. And it's going to be a very interesting next couple of weeks as well, because everything is on the line at the moment with regards to the future of football in this country. And it stretches all the way back to the deal that was done to keep the FAI in place and the memorandum of understanding that was signed at that point, which has now become a lightning rod for the controversy which exists within the FAI between the executive and between the board. And it came to a head last night when the board issued a statement, not through the FAI's media channels. So we're going to get into that with Mark McSharry and with Shane Ross in just a moment. Let's just hear from Niall Quinn at yesterday's FAI press conference.
To put it, I suppose, quite bluntly, is it almost this plan of what?
I think it is. I mean, we have got to the point where we have finished all the discussions. So, like, the government ministers have met our board, the government ministers have met ourselves, the UEFA and FIFA have met our board. We have really exhausted all the discussions. And, I mean, there's a very clear message in that. You know, we need to put in place good governance reform, and the association will, no doubt in my mind, will thrive as a result of it. Because the any conversations I've even had with potential sponsors, the first thing they want to know is that you have proper governance in place. And if you have proper governance, they'll invest in it. Because we have a fantastic sport, we have thousands and thousands of people participating in it, but we're not actually getting the value out of it. So look at our facilities compared to other sports, and look at our facilities compared to other European countries. If we were way above our weight, we would have much better facilities all around the country. And that's ultimately what the players on the ground, what our people at grassroots want, what our League of Ireland clubs want. How do you get that? You get that through proper confidence, funding, through government and stakeholders who are interested in helping you. There's a lot to play for.
It's about returning the trust, Will, to the game that's obviously missing now, and how do we best do that given the financial predicament we find ourselves in, and the misleading stuff that's out there. You know, I you're right, COVID-19 has meant we haven't had a series of meetings, we haven't been able to go face to face with people, we've just got on with it while the narrative went the way it did and hysteria crept in, both politically and you know, in media in general. We try to remain diligent, get the best position on the table for discussion, and the Red Cow on Friday will be a big day. But I think that the misgivings that were out there, you know, as Gary's mentioned, there's another one, you know, that people are going to get turfed out after all the work that they've done. That's not true either. So I think when people understand and weigh up exactly what we're proposing, why it's being proposed, then I would hope that a unity will come around and we will see 6+6, not 6v6.
Yeah, that has become kind of the key issue here, is the makeup of the board, which ultimately seems to be quite a small issue in the overall history and future of the Football Association of Ireland. But it has become the key issue, and some very interesting details in John Fallon's piece today in the Irish Times. He's seen an email chain in the immediate aftermath of the Memorandum of Understanding being signed. And look, again, we can get lost in the weeds of this, but essentially the FAI needed a bailout. They needed a bank loan, and they needed the government to act as guarantors, to rubber stamp that bank loan, to make sure that if anything happened down the line, they would stand in. So it looks and sounds a little bit like a bailout, and so a lot of people have assumed that it is one. As soon as the Memorandum of Understanding was issued to the board, several of them got in touch and said that they would find it difficult to sell this to the grassroots. Roy, just Gary Owen said, and this is, he had this to say in the sequence of events: the process was quite fast at the end, but the board members had the same opportunity to review what the terms and conditions of the Memorandum of Understanding were, and they signed off on it. It was approved beforehand, even I would say reluctantly approved. Not so according to the football cohort, and the Irish Times say that they've seen an email chain, which the email gets sent out at 9:02. I don't believe we'll be able to deliver on the amended corporate governance enhancements. The original review was an extremely hard sell. That's said Dick Shakespeare, who gets back within an hour. Dave Moran then says, I agree with Dick. Yes, the football family had to take some pain, but 6 independent directors from 12 would be difficult to push through. And then Vice President Paul Cook says, I agree with Dick and Dave. Quick thought that it might be easier for the board increasing to 14. And then Joe O'Brien comes in and says, as this is a Memorandum of Understanding, do you have any room to manoeuvre? The document seems to be a collaboration of various stakeholders, all except the main ones, ourselves. That's the people on the board who have been elected. And so the people involved there are Dave Moran, Dick Shakespeare, and Paul Cook and Joe O'Brien, four of whom are signatories. The other signatories to the statement that came out last night, John Finnegan, Martin Herity, and Ursula Scully. If I missed anybody, Jerry McEnany on that one as well. Mark McSharry gets a mention in the statement last night. During the press conference, Mr. Owens refuted a claim made by Fianna Fáil deputy Mark McSharry that a Memorandum of Understanding with government was signed on the 30th of January without it being discussed at a board meeting earlier that day. Mr. Owens went on to claim the board members had the opportunity to review the terms and conditions were, and they did sign off on it. They didn't sign off on it afterwards. They signed off on it beforehand. Now, I haven't seen that quote anywhere else today, and it certainly wasn't in the broadcast section yesterday. So obviously the board have seen the press conference, or members of the board appear to have seen the press conference that was just for the written media yesterday as well. Deputy Martin McSharry is with us this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So you seem to have fairly accurately surmised what the board are thinking at this point, Mark. How did that happen?
Well, I suppose first, the FAI kind of issue, the latest issue as opposed to the scandals of the past, about 5 months ago came across my desk from ordinary jersey washers and pitch markers and some council members and so on throughout the country. So I started to look into the story and the governance issues which underpin the actions of the last number of months, which, given my own background in the Public Accounts Committee and others, was a problem. And so I took the opportunity to put a number of things on the record at the Dáil. Initially, the independent chairman refuted in a much publicised last night statement by RTE, who seemed to have missed the boat of this particular story since yesterday, but thanks to yourselves. And the following week, the independent chairman had called that I checked my facts. So I forensically checked my facts in the week that intervened and made another statement in the Dáil, which seems to have been borne out now by a statement by 8 of the 12 directors of the FAI last night, which I welcome. Look, all of us are committed to a renewed FAI and one that operates to the highest standard of governance and promoting the game at all levels. But sadly, what has taken place over the last 4 or 5 months has left an awful lot to be desired in the context of good corporate governance. And we were entering what we thought was a new era, but as things have been approached, as far as I'm concerned, it wouldn't pass the governance test by any objective analysis.
Do you feel any concern that somebody from the board is briefing you, and that actually seems like the old politics of the FAI as opposed to something new? Like, why would the board be briefing a member of the Dáil when actually they can just make statements or have this out in the boardroom?
Sure. I mean, if my primary sources were board members, I'd agree with you on that. They're not. That's not what led me into this story. But I was in a position to make contact with some board members in trying to underpin what I knew to be the facts, and I'm glad to see that that's borne out last night. So, I mean, we're not talking about a rogue member of a board here. I mean, what you had is a statement last night from 8 of 12, that's more than two-thirds, which I think in the context of any board decision would constitute almost unanimity. But my sources have been throughout the game from the grassroots level right up to...
Sure, and I'm not querying why you got interested in the story in the first place, but clearly at this stage you have been putting stuff out in the public domain over the last while that has been helpful to board members, and they're effectively... It's a pincer movement between you and the board at this point, and so you're kind of, they're corroborating their own information, because otherwise how would you have known exactly when the board were given access to the memorandum of understanding? I guess this is important because it speaks a little bit to me when you say it's nearly unanimity. That's interesting. That's kind of the core here, that it isn't unanimity if there's only six of them. It's half and half, and all of a sudden you can't just get the old guard of the FAI to ramrod decisions through.
Yeah, I just didn't follow you there, six of them. I understood 8 directors of 12 made a statement last night.
They did, yeah, they did.
Okay. And yeah. I was just making an analogy that to the average boardroom, 8 out of 12 would probably constitute unanimity. But look, what I'd say in terms of the 6 and 6, I mean, we know the history here with the Horne report, which... then Minister Ross came out and welcomed and trumpeted along with Support Ireland at the beginning of a new era. We all welcomed it indeed, where we were going to have 4 independent directors to add expertise to the board. And that 4 became 6 sometime between January and July. The only time I can identify where it changed was after a meeting. Someone with the department, FAI reps, where it became 6 and 6, which was a departure from the Horan report, which had been welcomed by all the previous July. And it is a total outlier. If you took other sporting organisations where, for example, there were issues such as the Olympic Federation, boxing or athletics, you're looking at 2 independent directors there, and that's following all the reviews and so on.
Sure. I think that point was put to Gary Owens yesterday, and he said that none of those sports organisations have the same level of debt as the FAI. I'm sorry to labour the point, but just to go back on the board essentially putting stuff into the public domain through you and through Dáil Privilege, are you not a bit uncomfortable with the fact that they're not doing that themselves? Like, why are they using your Dáil Privilege to put this information on the record? I don't understand that.
But I have no issue not using Dáil Privilege to say the same thing. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, a bit like yourselves as journalists, how do you get your information sources? How do we do work in politics in terms of making representations to improve situations? We get information, we put it into the public domain, we try and make representations to have it improved. It's absolutely no different.
So you're happy to use the information that board members are giving you because you believe it's for the ultimate benefit of the FAI, is that correct?
The benefit of football. I mean, whether Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck run the FAI is of no issue to me, provided it's run correctly. It's not about personality, it's about it being done correctly. And of course, in any information that would come my way, I'd need 2nd, 3rd, and 4th sources, given the background, with some of the issues in the FAI in the past. But the entrenched, the language, which is highly evocative at times, has been used about old guard versus new guard and this kind of thing, which Minister Ross at the time was very fond of. I have no agenda for any old guard any more than I have a new guard, but I do have an agenda in terms of governance. So you can't dress up the new era as good governance when I've proven beyond doubt and corroborated by 8 of the 12 board members last night.
But hang on, sources, that's not how sources work, Mark. Sources, a second source is not the same source twice. Like, if the board members are supplying you with information from a board meeting, and we now see they're acting as a group because they've issued a statement as a group, that's the same source. Like, ultimately, that's the same source. And it's serving their ends. Like, you're literally just helping that group achieve their ends, which to the general public is protecting their asses. Because what they're saying is they don't want two of their members to go down. The memorandum of understanding, which was signed by the interim CEO, who was given the power to do so by the appropriate democratic mechanisms within the FAI prior to that, saved the FAI, and it did, at the same time, agree to the board members going from 8 to 6 who are coming from the football family. That eight, that group of eight, have given you information, and they've said, oh yeah, he's telling the truth. And that's not a second source, that's the same source.
No, I disagree with you entirely. I mean, in the first instance, you're assuming that I spoke to all eight. That's not correct.
No, I'm assuming that they're acting as a group. I said that they were acting as a group. They've issued a statement as a group. So they're acting as a block. That's clear that they're acting as a block at the moment.
While I was on hold there, did you not read out an email trail before the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding?
Yeah, John Fallon has an email trail. Yeah.
Okay, right. So let's assume that that's correct. It's similar to an email trail that I'd have seen myself as part of my own research. But I think where you're coming from, is this Ger or Owen I'm talking to, by the way?
It's Ger, yeah.
Ger, sorry. I think where you're coming from here is that here's Mark McSharry as the Trojan horse for the bad guys of the past. I mean, there are some of the eight football directors that haven't been around the scene at all. And I think that I wouldn't like to cast any aspersions on their reputations or the expertise that they bring.
Casting any aspersions on them, but they are acting as a block. They've issued a statement as a block.
They have. And I'm pleased on a personal level they did, because when you were the interim CEO saying yesterday that I was incorrect, when I know I'm not, I have to say I was quite pleased that statement did emerge. But there are a number of things there. First and foremost, poor governance. By any objective analysis over the last 6 months in the FAI. Number two, this 4 and 8 has become 6 and 6.
And what's wrong with that? So let's just take that, right? So you're saying it doesn't happen in other sports organisations. Like, what my neighbour does is always the worst thing to define what I'm going to do. So
can I ask you, and you're a sports journalist who have a lot more experience than me, can you name one other organisation in the world that is an independent majority?
It's not a majority. It's not 6 and 6 is not a majority, right? So
it is, because the independent chairman is the casting vote.
And actually, okay, the independent chairman can hand that casting vote over to the president, and the AGM can decide that. That was all dealt with in the half an hour press conference yesterday.
So the AGM
is the power broker here. Why does it matter? Is the question. What everybody wants to know is why is this the point on which you are trying to make everybody focus at the moment, when the clear focus should be on the massive debt mountain that the FAI have managed to walk themselves into over the last decade.
And unless you have the appropriate governance structures in place, it doesn't matter how big or small the debt mountain is. I won't have confidence as somebody who is responsible ultimately for taxpayers' money.
Okay, that's a good point, right?
So that's where I'm coming from.
And how has the football family proven itself capable of doing this?
I'm not happy with the governance structures that are in place, because there has been too many obscure processes that have taken place. Last night's statement seemed to, as far as I'm concerned, confirm that. I also highlighted other governance questions, both in the Dáil and in the following week in the Sunday Independent and an article that I wrote. And those issues are still there. What we are, as we're setting up the FAI, as a total outlier in world sport in terms of the configuration of the board. There is no sport.
Why is that an issue? Why is that an issue? And why is the assumption that the people... So we've seen an appointment from somebody who is a football coach at under-9 level in Drumcondra, is one of the independent directors, who also happens to understand how the departments work. Somebody who is incredibly well qualified. There's an assumption that he is somehow going to be against the 6 football directors, even though he's clearly a football man. By whatever standards, he's clearly a football man. Why is the assumption that these independent directors are somehow going to be at war with the 6 directors? That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, they could be all football people in terms of they've played the game at different levels, or maybe coached under A. But, I mean, there is a structure in place. It's a members, not-for-profit organisation, and they elect board members. And that particular director, while he'd be an asset to any organisation if he wasn't so busy in the Department of Public Expenditure,
He has downtime, and this is a voluntary position. I think that's a cheap jibe. I actually think that's a cheap jibe, to be honest.
Well, that's a matter for you to decide, but it's what I believe and it's what I put on the record at the House. And
he's too busy to be an independent director that meets once a month, is what you're saying, and so therefore he shouldn't have taken the job. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, as far as I was concerned, that there was questions around conflicts of interest there.
What's the conflict of interest?
Well, on one hand, you're part of the organisation handing out the money, and on the other hand, you're part of the organisation spending it.
I guess that's up for the FEI and for him to decide, and you've put that on the record. The point about him being too busy, I think, is everybody needs to have some downtime. And if we're asking our civil servants not to be involved in public life outside of their job, then we're probably asking them not to have a good work-life balance. And I think it's important that we actually do encourage volunteers to get involved in local sport and at governance level, particularly when they have the expertise and experience to do that. To go back to
the department did say to the Independent last Saturday week that on the basis of his involvement in the board, he won't be able to be involved now in any sporting-related funding decisions in the department. So that's a delusion of the primary goal to facilitate a secondary one, and I don't think it's good practice. But I did point out at the beginning of this point that the gentleman in question would be a huge asset to any organisation.
What is the issue with having six independent directors who are well qualified on a board? How does this actually weaken the position of football in Ireland? If your point is that football people should be in charge and in a majority position or almost unanimous was the 8 out of 12 is what you used earlier on. If
that was in the context of the statement last night.
But it's still 8 out of 12, which is exactly the scenario going into the future. So, that rump block, that block of eight who come from there would still be, in your words, in a position of unanimity into the future if that situation was to hold. Mm. Which, this is an organisation who didn't display good governance for the last decade and a half. I think we can all agree that, right?
Or the last 6 months.
And so, as a matter of interest, Mark, I haven't seen you on the record for the previous decade when this was an issue. I haven't seen you address this point, whether or not the current people were involved, they come from the same processes that elected the board for the last decade and a half that allowed the previous existence, the previous administration, to walk the organisation into the debt it has at the moment.
Well, to carry that analogy through, it's like saying that the people that elected the government that made mistakes shouldn't be allowed to vote again. That just doesn't stand up, Chair.
My point here is that it seems to me members of the board are giving you information to try and protect themselves so that the eight doesn't become six. And you're going to bat for them on this issue, saying that the governance over the last 6 months hasn't been good, but you're not on the record at any point in the previous decade criticising the previous administration, who all were a product of the same processes which gave us the eight that we're going to have.
Okay, now I don't expect you to cover all hearings in the Oireachtas, but I think if you go back particularly to my time in the Senate, you'll find that you're incorrect in that.
Can you point us to stuff in the Senate that you said about John Delaney then?
Certainly, his salary being far too much at the time. Particularly when you had league winners getting 100,000 and he was getting 450,000. I think that was particularly exasperated in my view at the time, where having won the FAI Cup, Sligo Rovers received their medals, and on the medals it was said S-I-L-G-O, Sligo was spelled, so that the focus was definitely on the league. So certainly if you go back on the record, you will find...
About governance?
I mightn't have been aware of it to the same extent of others. That issues were there. But I mean, the entire tone of your own approach to me, and I get it, and there's no problem, you have a job to do, is that in some way I'm here batting for the old regime, and you're wrong on that. That's former Minister Ross's view as well, and no matter how many times you say it, won't make it the truth.
Not the old regime, you're batting for the new regime. You're batting for the board of eight people who last night issued a statement collectively.
I am batting for good governance. In two speeches on the record of the Dáil, I have shown clearly poor governance practices. Those poor governance practices are borne out by a statement of the board last night. My sources, while including one or two members of the board, include at least 26 other people involved in soccer at all levels.
But they don't have access to the board. They don't have access to the board information that you made public. So, like, obviously, look, and I mean, it's completely fair for you to have sources on the board. That's fine. I just question why the board isn't actually. It took until last night for the board to come out and make statements. Why they haven't aired these grievances in public? Why they haven't actually, you know, come forward and said this is what we think? And actually, if good governance is supposed to, this is supposed to happen in the boardroom, then I would question the board's approach to this as well. I think that it's fair to question everybody. It is absolutely fair to, and we need to see a statement from the interim CEO to see exactly what he's going to say about what the board said last night. And it's going to be a very interesting few days. Mark, if you could stay with us, please, because Shane Ross has joined us. Shane, I don't know how much of what you've heard of the conversation that we've been having with Mark McSharry there. Can we go back to the key question that he raised, actually? One of the key questions that he raised when... this 6v6, 8v4 membership of the board seems to be a massive point of contention for the board. I don't know how much the grassroots actually cares about that, to be honest, but we'll see. And we can canvass views. 087-9180-180 is the number. When did it become 6 and 6 as opposed to 8 and 4?
Well, I think you'll find it was a gradual process, but what was absolutely, what we were absolutely determined was that if the FAI was to continue to get government money, which it wasn't getting at the time, we're talking about around December, or it was to be restored, that we were to be able to see an absolutely certain way to reform. And we thought that at that time it was absolutely essential if government money was to be restored. And you've got to remember that the COSY report said that it was not, the FAI was not fit for government money. So we had to introduce some very dramatic reforms, and it evolved around that period. It was written into the MOU specifically to ensure that those reforms were seen through, and this is the corporate governance review reforms and other reforms. I don't, you know, that the hang up on 6 and 6, which is absolutely correct and is there at the moment, and I think should definitely stay. But I think it was Niall Quinn who said yesterday, and I think he's right, don't constantly see this as kind of two blocks. I mean, the independents who have been appointed there are not necessarily all going to vote one way in every issue, and I hope that isn't the case. They're meant to be independent and have independent views. And I hope also the other people who are coming from the old FAI, I hope that they also will be thinking, considering all the issues on their merits. And there'll be kind of, you know, there'll be a cross voting and cross opinions coming through there over a period of time. But at the moment, because of this is an extraordinary situation. You remember, it was only December last year when we found out what the real state of the accounts were, which was 55 million, 55 million debt. The board of the FAIs was at the time came in to see us, Brendan Griffin and I at the time, absolutely saying they're going bankrupt in the morning. You know, this is the message they're going to us. And we said, well, look, we've been told not to give you any more funds by COSY, but if we can see an absolute clear pathway, and that would include the independent directors and the 10-year rule, by the way, which is now I think it is up for some sort of controversy as well. It would be absolutely essential that we see that and that we see a future for the FAI that's reformed. So it developed during that period, but it's obviously was absolutely vital for us that we see this organization reformed and reformed for good and not going back to the old ways. And that was how it evolved.
Mark McSherry, that all seems fairly reasonable in terms of protecting the public fund to put independent directors on the board.
Sure, absolutely. And there's a precedent throughout the world of having two or three, and what we agreed and welcomed and the minister welcomed was four. But I'm interested to know from Shane, when precisely did it change from 4 to 6 and why?
I think it changed precisely because the crisis was so great and so immediate. And we were in a situation where we were in a difficult situation in government where an organization, COSY, an independent organization, had said to us, look, they're not fit for purpose, this organization, this is the FAI. Don't give them, they were actually sending out a message, don't give them money the way they are at the moment. And we were so interested, our only interest, and I think Mark's is the same and everybody else is, our interest is getting football at grassroots level, primarily, going and keeping it going and not seeing a collapse of Irish football. Forget about the FAI for a second. And we said, well, what can we do about this? All right. They want so much money, but we cannot allow a situation to go back. And we've got to guarantee it. In fact, we've got to copper fasten it doesn't go back to where it was before, because $55 million in debt, where we have accounts just released, where we didn't know anything about it in the years before, was absolutely incredible. Now, this is essential. It's essential to have those independent members because they have had nothing to do with that past at all, and they have the interests of football at stake, as I hope, as I'm sure the other directors have as well. But we don't want to see this division that we've seen here today. We want to see them all saying, look, we want to get football going. I mean, I just want to bring one point, which I think is very, very important. Jerry McEnany, who I think is now saying he welcomed this MOU. I don't quite understand whether the others did as well, but he publicly welcomed it, the president of the FAI. I don't know what he's saying now, what the position is, but I would just say to him, you know, I know he's got a different view, I think, from several others of the other directors who signed that letter. So there are healthy signs in that they're not a completely united block against block, but that's what we want to see. We want to see them all taking independent views.
Mark?
Yeah, the minister, Shane, alluded to the 10-year rule on council, and we note from yesterday's press conference that that seems to be a movable feast now, where those with longer service may be in a position to stay on. So was that envisaged as part of the MOU, that it was open to interpretation by the independent directors of the FAI? And if that's the case, does that mean the 6-6 is open to interpretation? Or what standing does the MOU have as far as Shane is concerned when it was put together?
Well, I signed the MOU with Roy Barrett, as you know, so I had the standing of the government on that, the full support of the government for it, and I think have also got the full support of the current government, as far as I know, for that. It's up to them, of course, what they have. But let me just remind you what was in it. I think it was just the phrasing about the 10 years I got in front of me. In accordance with the recommendation 66 of the government's review group report, review and agree a process for the change to council membership. This is what was agreed, taking into account and acknowledging the service of current members with a view to retiring council members with greater than 10 years service by July 2020. That pretty plain. That was the intention, and that was the agreement, that they would be retired. And that was what was approved, and that was what, obviously, President McEnany must have approved, because he said in his statement afterwards, Jerry McEnany, he said, today's agreement will ensure the survival of football in Ireland. As an organisation, we must now remain focused on the fact that failure to reach today's historic agreement would have placed the FAI in extreme peril. And he went on to say, once again, I'd like to thank Ministers Ross and Griffin for their continued support for football in Ireland. We were all on the same side that way. And I don't quite see what's happened since.
Let me ask you what you think has happened since. Essentially, what's happened since is the reality of the board, the elected members going from 8 to 6 has become crystallised. A couple of those members of the board are going to lose their jobs. What else has happened since?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, that may be part of what the agenda we've got now, where they're set. I mean, to say it's crystallised, it was crystal clear to me, and I think to everybody else when I signed that, what going to 6-6 meant equality in those terms, and it made a few more independent directors. And certainly, it was crystal, but it must have been crystal clear to them when they welcomed it, unless they didn't read it. You know, and it must have been also crystal clear to them when they signed it then, that some people who are on the board now have been, or on the board now, maybe been there 10 years, or have been on the council, maybe been there too long, and they may have to go off. But that is right and proper. That's good governance. The people after 10 years should go. And I'm sure that I think he's probably one of them. I don't know, Jerry McEnany, I think he's probably one. I think he probably, if he is one, I think he will gracefully retire like others. But there will be lots of really good people to take his place. And that's, you know, we don't want to see a complete clean out of, you know, kind of everybody from everywhere in the FAI at all. But we do want to see the board moving on and changing, as would happen in any company of this sort. But certainly in particular, in this company, it's very important that we do have fresh blood because of the huge debt that they're facing. And we were expected to put a large amount of money into this, which we agreed to do, but it was conditional, obviously, on refreshing the board and the radical measures which we thought were so important for football.
Mark, if it was up to you, would you be willing to die on this hill of the 8-4 or the 6-6? As in, would you be willing to forego the bailout for the sake of having 8 football people in the top tier of the FAI?
No, I would support the bailout, and indeed, as Shane will testify, I mean, we were calling for government support and support government support for it, but the conditionality that was attached to that, I mean, most people accept it and expected that the governance review group, the Horne report, was going to underpin that, but we had this change from 6 and 6. If I could just say about the 10-year rule again there, and Shane has said that, look, we don't want to clean out everybody, and, you know, there's succession planning and knowledge transfer, which I'm sure is important in any company, and I'm sure Shane would agree. But what it effectively does, this rule, now it seems to be open to interpretation, and I'd like Shane to answer that, because they seem to be interpreting it now and changing the goalposts, and if that's the case, is the 6 and 6 changeable? But the point I wanted to make is, during the regime of the past that was bad, there were three in particular that stood up and were effectively ran out of the organisation: Brendan Menton, Brendan Dillon and John Byrne. And I know Shane will have met those and be aware of their story in the past. Would also exclude them, despite their courageous attempts to challenge the previous regime before it got totally out of hand. And the rule excludes them. I mean, in terms of the personalities who populate the board, as I said earlier on or alluded to earlier, I'm a different Hoothia. I'm a different whether the current date move off and it's a different date. I just think in terms of world sport, it's important that you have the appropriate knowledge around the table, including independent expertise. But if you look at sport throughout the world, and indeed the other sporting organisations that have had crises and funding and other governance issues here, you have 2 and 3 out of 16 in some cases that are independent directors. The other thing that underpins this, and Shane, with his experience in business and politics and the reputation that he has as a consummate professional, he could not stand over the sort of governance failings that we've seen in the last 6 months, where, frankly, and the department will have to be asked this, were they aware that the board of the SAI did not, on that morning, approve before signature of the MOU?
Okay, can I come in on that?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm very happy to. The answer on the 10-year rule is as look, I'm not minister now, so look, it's obviously up to somebody else, and that's very appropriate that it should be. But as far as I'm concerned on the 10-year rule, it stands. It was a binding part of the agreement. And it should stand. It should stand, not for any reason of revenge or any personalities or anybody involved. And it doesn't matter who you mention there. It should stand. And it should stand because that is good governance, that people should not be on boards of any sort like this for more than 10 years. That is just good, proper governance to prevent issues like they've had before happening, because people get, you know, they get rather lazy, and they get or they fall into all sorts of traps. They get used to it too much, and they become insiders. And I don't think Brendan Menton or Brendan Dillon actually are currently members of the council. But never mind.
No, that's the point. That is the point. They're not.
You're saying they couldn't come back. No, they couldn't come back. They couldn't come back despite the fact that they stood up.
But is that correct? I mean, I don't hold a candle for any of those individuals, but I am aware of the fact that they did attempt to challenge it at the time, and then. I mean, you were fond of using the term old guard, not one I like myself. Of course, there's an old guard in Sport Ireland and an old guard in the department, all of whom heard no evil and saw no evil through the years.
I mean, well, I think a lot of...
Neither did you,
you know,
in fairness.
That's fair enough. That's a very fair charge, but they did get audit accounts, which they looked at. The point about the 10-year rule is it's got to be good. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. If it's good for all public companies, it's good for other companies. It's good for companies because it's good corporate governance. Because people fall into bad habits after a certain amount of time, it's got to be good for the FAI. We can't make any exceptions. You don't make any exceptions. There are hundreds of good people in Irish football who could sit on the board as what they call kind of football representatives. Hundreds of thousands. I mean, what I was looking to do, and it was basically to get the grassroots onto the board of the FAI, get the fans on, get the grassroots representatives on, because they speak their minds, they don't have any particular agenda. And I have no problem at all about saying anybody after 10 years should go, because Mark, I know you'd meet them in your constituency. I met them every single weekend in my constituency. I met people working day and night, volunteers. Every single one of them would be a fantastic representative on the board of the FAI. And that's what we want to see. Who think about football and don't think about politics all the time. You know, that's what we need.
Shane, just on Mark's second point there, I just begin to get your response to that. He was asking you, when exactly did the board members know the terms and conditions of the memorandum of understanding? When did they sign off on it? Was it before they met with the government or after they met with the government?
I don't know the answer to that question. I met my meetings and my signed memorandum was with Roy Barrett, and I presume he had he was a plenipotentiary. Standing for the board. No, I didn't. But you have to be sure of that. But I think he's a very, very good and honourable guy. Quite honestly, I didn't know him at all before this, by the way. But I think having met him since, I think he's an absolutely straight down the line guy. And I don't think there's any question that in my experience with him, that he would be doing anything improper or wrong or that without the authority that he needed. I don't think that's in question. And that seems to me to be borne out by the statement I read to you from Jerry McEnany, when he says he welcomed the news. You know, as president of the SAI, I wish to offer my sincerely congratulations. He says here, this is the day after, as president of the FAI, I wish to offer my sincere congratulations to our independent chairperson and his team on reaching an agreement with the government and other important stakeholders. That is what he said the day afterwards. That is not doesn't sound like a guy who was unhappy that he hadn't seen the agreement in advance.
And he is a signatory to the statement
correct.
Last night. So in fairness, Mark McSharry, that brings me right back to my point at the start, that actually your source is this group on the board. And so if you're saying what they're saying, that actually that's not a second source. They're not corroborating your story. You're actually just putting their story into the public domain and they're repeating it and saying, that guy's telling the truth over there, which leads me to wonder about this board and their approach to governance, as opposed to actually at the time saying, hang on a second, these are our issues, what about that? What they've done is wait for months and months. And I would say, given you this information, and look, it's right and proper that we should have these debates because there is so much public money going in. But I think the point that as somebody who's as a sports fan in this, I want more independent people keeping an eye on what's happening on any of the sports organisations in this country who are getting public funding. And I still don't understand how you think us as a country having independent people on the board is going to do us as taxpayers any damage.
You see, if the board, if it's a financial services company, you don't put a majority of gardeners on the board, okay? Now, I have an issue. This is a members' organisation. It's a not-for-profit organisation.
That gets public funding, a massive amount of support from the government in the form of a guarantee on a loan, which we don't know if they're going to be able to repay or not. Do you not want Ireland represented on that board in a way that they should be?
You're interviewing yourself now, Ger. If you want me, let me answer the questions.
You're talking about gardeners.
The reality is, though I gave an analogy, yeah? The reality is this. I have no issue who is on the board, but I think the sport that's represented by this board should have a majority of people from that sport on it. Who the personalities are, I have no interest once there's an appropriate process to put them in place. What we have done is retro-engineered the board now to facilitate what, coincidentally, a number of whom were involved in a different group altogether, and that's fine. They may be the very best people for the job, as I've said in the record at the door. The process that has taken place in terms of signing the MOU, in terms of other relationships to do with the board, and recruitment that have taken place over the last 6 months, does not stand up to basic corporate governance principles. And I've shown that at the door, and I have no issue with anybody challenging my view on it. In terms of my sources, as I said, my sources included two people on the board and about 26 other people involved, from pitch markers and jersey washers right up along. So like you, and I think at the very outset I said, we all want to see our football federation renewed and operating to the highest standard of governance and promoting the game at all levels. We're all on the same page on that one. I'm just not on the same page in how we've dealt with it over the last 6 months, which unfortunately bears a level of grubbiness that doesn't quite match the mistakes of the past, but doesn't augur well and doesn't sit well with me.
Comparing them to the mistakes of the past where the debts are...
I said it wasn't quite as grubby. Now, the other thing
it wasn't quite as grubby. It's a scale of grubbiness, and I think that's the impression you're trying to leave in people's minds.
The other thing, no, I'm not trying to leave anything in the people's minds. I'm just telling you what I feel. And the other thing is, what I would like to see is the so-called old guard, to use Shane Ross's terms, of Sport Ireland being properly cross-examined about all of these matters, because I'm just not comfortable that they were doing what they could have done. in the past. They took a very hands-on view on boxing and on other issues, but they seem to look the other way, or certainly that's how it looks to me at times in the past. And there's also people in the department. And yeah, taxpayers' money has to be protected. But I'm not prepared to make the sweeping remark that everybody that was involved in football, and indeed Shane Ross bore this out himself, from grassroots level up,
but nobody's made that
aren't in a position. No, but the implication of what's happening.
No, it's not. The implication of what's happening is
we'll have six from
football and six from outside football, and away we'll go.
And the control will rest. And the control on anything controversial will rest with the independents.
The control should surely rest with the best decision. There shouldn't be a group.
But the way you're configuring the board is the Animal Farm George Orwell approach.
No, the way you're configuring it is to try and get the best decision.
I agree with you. The best decision should always
You're
win.
Saying that the only way that these independent directors are going to vote is collectively.
No, I didn't.
You said control on the decision-making will rest with the independents.
It may well. And you highlighted earlier on that the chairman, if he so chooses, can pass his casting vote.
If the AGM chooses, they can do that.
To pass the vote to somebody else. And if they don't, then control will rest with that chair. So it's what the six plus the chair, if he has the casting vote, decides is the best decision.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I don't know the scenarios where it would always be a six versus six. It'd be a fairly fractious board if all of the decision making ended up resting with the independent chair. And again, look, that would ultimately come down to who ends up being in that chair in the long term. Look, it's been a good debate. I don't know, Shane Ross, if there's anything that you want to that we haven't covered here that you think would be important to get on the record in terms of what happens next and what you think should happen next before we go.
Well, I just think that people should kind of stand back for a minute and look at this and not be quite so confrontational. I think the idea that it's going to go 6-6 on everything at all is absurd. I don't know the two women directors who were appointed independent at all, but I know Roy Barrett since he was appointed, and he's not going to be a guy who says, okay, you think that way, so I think that way. These are going to be independent thinkers as well, and I'm sure the people who are coming from the other six will also be independent thinkers as well. And once they get off the ground and they get the issues going, they will all act, I think, in the interests of football. This is a massive debt which has to be paid off. They're very dependent on FIFA and UEFA and the Bank of Ireland. And they have all, by the way, as far as I know, backed this MOU. They've all said, look, their support is dependent upon the MOU and the terms of the MOU staying. And that's what people should remember. And they are interested in football as well. And they supported this because they didn't want to see, obviously, their money going down the tubes, which would be a disaster, but because they think football is worth supporting. So I think just sit back, go to the AGM, give this board a try, and we'll see. With a 6-6 divided, not division, but people elected from on a 6-6 basis, in other words, from different constituencies, and see how it works, because we have every confidence that this way forward is the right one, and that this really sick organization that was is on the right road, and there'll be bumps on the road as well. But I think it'll, at the end of the day, with goodwill, I think it'll be all right, because I think at the end of the day, there are, several hundred thousand people younger than you and me who go out every Saturday and Sunday to play football and just to enjoy themselves, the good of their health, their mental health, their physical health. And that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, they're going to be people who win or lose out of this.
Shane Ross, Mark McSherry, thanks to both of you for joining us this morning.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.